a social worker who's retired now. My husband and I are teaching a course up here for 2 weeks, and he's concentrating on physical problems of mostly the elderly, and I'm trying to hit some of the social things that happen as we age. And today we're going to be talking about communicating and loving. And the first thing we're going to do is to try to find some definitions to some of these words. Communication, talk, and listen. When I was thinking about it, I kind of took it for granted that I knew what they meant. So I said to myself, well, I think I'll look in the dictionary and see what Webster has to say about these words. And after I tell you what he had to say about them, maybe you can tell me what your impression of these words is. Webster says about communication that it's an act or instance of transmitting. That reminds me of my husband being a ham radio operator, and I think of transmitting that way. But it could be other ways too. Information communicated. A process by which information is exchanged between individuals through a common system of symbols, signs, or behavior. Personal rapport, or a lack of, between old and young persons. A technique for expressing ideas effectively, as in speech. And that gives you the clue that communicating isn't always by means of speech. Can you think of some other ways that we communicate to each other except by speech?
Telegraph?
Yeah.
Glasses.
Now they talk about body language.
What kind of body language speaks to you? My husband always said he could tell when we were going to the doctor that the closer we got, the slower I got at walking.
I would be broke my arm trying to push her along.
So I was communicating to him. He let me know I was communicating to him. To be communicative is defined as talkative or tending to communicate. Different idea. Now, talk is defined as to express or exchange ideas by means of spoken words, or to convey information or communicate in any way, as with signs or sounds. Like you've heard the expression, he can make a trumpet talk. So you think of musical instruments too, of being able to express emotion and convey a message. To speak idly or prate, to gossip, is another one. To reveal secret or confidential information. To talk back, that's sort of an old expression that we've all heard. To speak or answer impertinently. Talk sense, what does that mean? To speak logically, kind of, or be sensible. To talk through one's hat. Have you heard that expression?
Not know what you're talking about.
Right. How about talking turkey? I haven't heard that much lately, really. To talk turkey is kind of an old expression, but all these were in the dictionary. It's very interesting that in comparison to the dictionary, it has very little under the word listen. There are only about 3 different things under listen. To pay attention to sound, to hear something with thoughtful attention, to give consideration to a plea, to be alert to catch an expected sound. What would that be? Trying to catch an expected sound.
The bear listening for our whistle roll. Are you listening for us?
About the bear.
Right.
The baby's listening.
Babies cry. Waiting for the dinner bell. In the woods, it's really fun to listen, isn't it? Leaves blowing and squirrels dropping acorns down, all sorts of things. And in the Bible, it's kind of interesting to see how these words are used, and I think a person could spend a lot of time doing research on that. It would be kind of fun. In Job, Elihu says, "Give heed, O Job, listen to me. Be silent, and I will speak." And in Job 35, Job opens his mouth in empty talk. He multiplies words without knowledge. In Mark 9:7, God says, "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." In John 27, the man born blind answers some of the Pharisees, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciple?" And under the word speak in the Bible, Job says, where Zophar cries out, "But oh that God would speak and open his lips to you." In Matthew 12, Jesus says, "You brood of vipers, how can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks." So someday, when one has a lot of time, it would be fun to really go through and find a lot of references about speaking and talking and listening in the Bible, I think. It was interesting that in most of the passages about listening, there was kind of a plea for, "Listen to me." You ever felt like saying that?
Somebody?
Yeah.
I'm not just here.
Uh-huh. Understand me. Listen to me. What are some techniques that would help for listening, do you think? Yeah?
Eye to eye contact.
I know.
What?
Whatever.
All right. Since we've been dancing, we can.
You just don't say anything. Yeah. That's a good question. Of course, sometimes with people who are talking about things of a nature that we really don't have any understanding of what they're talking about. But frequently it's maybe it's a phrase that's used, or we're a little less attentive than we should be. And so we really don't know what they're talking about. And then if we don't find out what they're talking about, then we're in real trouble after that. I mean, if the conversation continues, we're in real trouble.
Yes?
I think in some cases it's very easy to listen. For instance, the different ministers giving sermons, for some they hold your attention, sometimes little anecdotes or personal stories, and your attention is riveted right there, and it's easy to listen. And others, you try to listen, and pretty soon your mind's wandering, and you think, gee, what did he say? You know,
right. All done.
So it's partly what's being said, so whether you can really keep your attention and listen.
Uh-huh. Do you ever have the problem of trying to think so hard of what you want to say in reply that you don't really hear what the person said? You're trying to think of a clever remark to make or another clever question to ask. And then you think, oh, that's terrible. I didn't really hear what they said. Do you think a person could learn to be a better listener? You set out to really look at a person and try to put some your own thoughts away for a minute, and I don't know, I think we'd have to practice a lot.
Some of us have to learn that out of necessity. About 10 years ago, I lost the hearing on my right ear. And before that, I used to find myself listening to, you know, two or three conversations going around, on around, and trying to keep on top of all of them. Mm-hmm. But I discovered that after I lost the hearing on that ear, I have to focus on the person who's talking and really listen.
So it was helpful to you in a way, wasn't it?
In a way it was.
Yes?
One of the biggest problems in listening, I think, is when you're introduced to someone and you hear someone's name and then you try to remember it later on. I have a problem with that.
Wish somebody could give us a sure way of remembering names, don't you?
What kind of tricks do you use?
I think for me, one of the important things about listening, I can listen all right, be quiet for the most part, but I don't always ask the right questions. I think later what I should have asked them to open up the subject further and have them really express themselves, what they really meant. But I don't always think of the right questions.
Sometimes we're better at it than others too, I think, don't you? We're more in tune with people or more sensitive to them or more empathetic, trying to see maybe what that person's life is like and what kind of a background they came out of. And then it's a little easier to ask a question that's helpful to that person.
I think May really said something when she said about how much time it takes. Either it does take a lot of time, or I think it's going to take a lot of time, so I'm already doing something else. Mm-hmm.
We have a lot, yes?
The matter of learning to listen, I think, ties to an awareness, number one, that we don't listen properly, as for an individual, mm-hmm. realize that. And then to be reminded of it. Now this session here today is going to be of value to me for one thing, that I am reminded again I don't listen the way I should. Now I may be average, or I may be above average, or mm-hmm. poorer than average, but I know I don't listen the way I should to listen effectively. And I'll go along and I'll slip back into my more sloppy habits, and then somewhere down the line this question will come up again.
Uh-huh.
Why do people not communicate well? Well, part of it is that the listener falls into the habits that we all fall into. We're thinking ahead what we're going to say, mm-hmm. and we're trying to keep track of two different conversations at mm-hmm. the same time.
So. Sometimes we're preoccupied with a problem ourselves, aren't we? I mean, we have troubles in our own life, and they're so big and they dominate everything that it's really difficult then to listen to someone else and acknowledge that somebody else has something important or could have a trouble as large as yours. Maybe that's one thing we can forgive people for when they don't seem to listen to us, is being aware that maybe something is bothering them and that's why they can't listen.
Seemed to be listening at the time, but I can't remember afterwards what was said. I wonder what you think of small talk. How's the weather? Where did you come from? What's your congregation like? I won't remember till the afternoon where you come from or so on, but is it valuable?
The beginning of communicating with someone is verbalizing, looking at them and finding out something about them and being interested. That's the problem with students not learning in school. Like she's saying, they're not interested. That's why they don't listen. And we have to start with interest and caring to listen.
So it's all right to ask you where you came from?
Oh, surely.
I think probably 80 or 90% of the talk we have to listen to is small talk.
I think there are times when we want to really get acquainted with a person, but there's also times or organizations that I go to when I come home, I think, oh, that was a waste of time. I didn't, get any closer really to anybody. It was just all sort of chit-chat all afternoon. So I think it's worth thinking about.
Yeah, I felt sort of disappointed sometimes when I'm in a situation like that. It's not very satisfying.
I'm often disappointed because it's really difficult to... I mean, there's things in life that are really so meaningful and mean so much, and yet we can go over the surface and just time after time after time. It does take time, though, to build something that you can share, that you want to, you know, that you can stand on a field so you can share with somebody else the deep things that, in your heart that you don't really want to laugh.
You know, one thing we can, a gift we can really give to older people especially is to let them have a time for remembering and for us to be listeners to each other in that process. Because it's so good to think back on your life and to remember the good times, the times you were successful, to work out some of the times that were painful, to work out some family relationships of long ago. Have any of you ever listened to older people talk about the olden days, you know? Is it fun or is it boring or how do you feel about it? Yeah?
Yeah, I took a course at Lutheran Northwestern from Kimball, and it was an exercise in listening for us as well as a minister of the aging. And one gentleman I went back to five times, and we must have spent 2 hours each time. It was historical for me in the sense of just life in his first confirmation camp in Bonner's Ferry, Idaho, I mean, in the early 30s and 20s. And then another woman I talked to had just had her 100th birthday, and she was there before, you know, the president she's met. And she was so excited to be able to share that and to have someone listen and care in that way. Kind of a life review,
right,
as we called it. And allowing that to happen. And pointing out that some, when they're perhaps in the older years of reviewing their life and maybe finding some healing in that by talking,
right,
through some of the experiences that they maybe have never shared with anyone.
Very good.
Or are still working and healing and dealing with.
Why do you think it would be healing to think about those things? Maybe we want to forget about them.
I think that I didn't run into that, and I'm sure I may someday. There were some that talked about death of a spouse maybe 25 years earlier, and tears still came. But they were not saying, I don't want to talk about that. It was still a good feeling for them.
Conscious, maybe, because somebody cares enough. And that is a building thing. It's a way to love, really, to be a good minister.
It is. It's a kind of a ministry in itself, isn't it? We were talking about ministries this morning with Gloria. You know, I want to share an experience I had with a patient at a VA hospital. He was about 50 years old, and he had multiple sclerosis. No, it wasn't. It was muscular dystrophy, I guess. And he had started to get that when he was in his 30s, I think. And he was completely dependent upon others for his care. He was in a wheelchair. He had to be hoisted into his bed. He had to be fed. Everything had to be done for him. And he needed attention so much, you know, that as a social worker, he was always calling me to his room for any little thing, you know, because he was lonely. He wanted somebody to talk to, really. So I thought, gee, how could, you know, I help him and help myself and everything at the same time? So we dreamed up this plan that he would tape his life for his kids and his grandkids. And so every week we would meet for 1 hour, and he would talk, you know, about his childhood and how he played marbles and how he was the best marble player in this little town in Iowa, and how he was such a good dancer in high school, and how he loved being in the Navy, and then about his marriage, and he told me all sorts of things about his house and the dogs they had and the cars he had and just everything. But to him, it became like his job of the week. You know, he would spend a lot of his time during the week thinking of things that he was going to tape on that day and that hour. And it wasn't any fakey type thing. We really were taping it for the three children that he had. And it was just wonderful to see how he could change. You know,
he'd writing a book, wouldn't it be?
It was like writing a book for him. And he didn't keep calling me, you know, all the rest of the week. He would see me in the hall maybe and say, oh, I just thought of something good we're going to talk about next week. But it was kind of a focus for his life, and it was really great. And then my husband and I kind of did that with my dad the 2 years before he died. He had a lot of unresolved feelings about his childhood, jealousies about his brother and other members of the family. And, you know, as he talked about them and kind of, you could see him, he did all the work. He worked it all out himself. You could see him sort of relax about it and accept, you know, that those people weren't perfect any more than he was. And I think it gave him a lot of peace, really. Have any of you had an experience like that with a relative that was kind of frail and you could see they weren't going to live long and that they were still, did you?
My daughter taped a conversation about an hour in length with her grandfather about a year before he died, a year or two. And then at the funeral, when she told the relatives that she had this tape recording of her grandfather, everybody wanted a copy of it. So we had to make about 12, 15 copies of that tape for all the rest of the family. But they all appreciated having it because that was the only record they had. They had his voice on tape then.
Well, that was a wonderful gift for everyone, wasn't it, to have all that information. And another thing we are always so conscious of is that that's history. And if we don't have it, it's going to be lost because they're the only ones that know that history.
I love gadgets, so maybe you shouldn't listen to what I say. I think that a tape recorder is a tremendous gift. I think it would be, you know, to have one around. I think it would be great if we taped our life story, each one of us. Now, I think most of us would have the experience that your grandfather, your father was it?
No, it was my wife's father.
Had, and that was that, you know, nobody wanted the tape until he died. But that's okay. That's part of our job, is to teach the next generations anyway. And I really am enthusiastic about it. Not that I've done it, but I think anybody I could encourage to do it, good for ourselves, just talking it over, we get to see it from a new light. And like Rosemary said, her dad got to see the day. Sure, they had their faults, and things weren't fair, but then so what?
If you're a good talker, maybe you could put it on a tape instead. Would it be easier to speak it?
Pardon?
Would it be easier if you could just speak the history?
But we care less and less as we get older, don't we?
Yeah.
I'm probably a little more negative on the visual keepsake. I never knew my great grandparents in Norway. I've never been in Norway, but I know what it's like there because of my ability to listen to the story and create and to kind of know personally my own creation of who my great grandparents are. I guess I feel like I knew that. I love the idea of the people story, but to have my sister and let them allow my children to hear me or hear the people's story,
grandparents like time so they can create their relationship.
Yes.
When my children were very small, I had just bought a recorder.
Mm-hmm.
So I recorded their first cry and some of those things. But the fidelity is so poor, there isn't much value.
Isn't there?
You know, but that was one of the first ways to record.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it'll be fun someday anyway for them to be here on these posts.
Never spouses.
We got a lot from our grandkids. Remember, we got a lot from our grandkids, with cries and gurgles and eating and one of them giggling for about 20 minutes straight. That was kind of nice, though.
This recorder, you try to get the baby to cry and record it. You can't re-record on those things. It has to be right the first time. So sometimes you wait quite a while before you're even done.
Correct. Then you have to get there first.
Have you done that?
For some of them, yeah.
You play them back as they get older?
We haven't played them for a while. They have played them back. And I think they're wonderful. I think them all.
Do they?
Yeah.
They like to hear themselves as
yeah.
a small child.
This is the play after Christmas. Well, what did you get for Christmas this year? That's the challenge.
They were so excited about those dumb things.
Their voices sound so childish.
They talk differently, I suppose. You know, when we're talking about communicating, I was thinking that, you know, every family has its own way of communicating, doesn't it? When you think of it. Like, when you have friends over, every couple has a different way of deciding when they're going to go home, don't they? You know. What do some of you do when it's time to go home?
Maybe it's time for us or for them. Time for us, well, I always say, well, okay, we're getting late. But thank you.
Who
said
that?
Oh, I usually do an eye tap. If I get sleepy early.
I had a father-in-law that was really sick when there was company there. They kept staying and staying. He said, come on, Ma, let's go upstairs and go to bed so these folks can go home.
Yeah.
That's pretty broad.
Sometimes it gets to go over.
Go get him a chair and stay.
My work for
the folks that can talk best when we're having a cup of coffee someplace. You know, we just jabber away. My husband, after one or two cups, is good for at least an hour. Maybe that's what you all need to try. A little Norwegian gasoline or whatever they call it.
For us, it works better after we've been walking, too. We considered our therapy, then, you see. I had a coronary 4 years ago, and that's part of the therapy. I have to walk, so we walk, and then we can have, you know, burn off the calories, and I can have a short stack when I get to the restaurant. But it's amazing how we can, and we've noticed it a number of times, remarked about it, that it's so easy to talk. I don't know, I may bore Rosemary to death by the things I talk about, but it's really easy when you've been walking. Sitting in a new atmosphere somewhere or other. The environment communicates a lot in some way or another. It gives you permission to talk. I don't know. You know, I've heard all these different things, and I'm not satisfied with any one of them. But it gives me permission to talk, anyhow. Not as much with friends, though. If there are two couples of us go out, then I'm not as free to talk as just the two of us.
Any of you have experience of having a time when you like to talk at home better? What time of day, or meal time?
I hate to do so much talking, but we have a very special family. It's like at the end of the day, we live on a lake, and there's an old swing under a great tree, the sycamore tree in our backyard, and that's our time of day to communicate. We go down to the river and sit down there, and we just love it. We visit with each other, and we've been together all day, but there's something about that relaxation and the outside world, and we're pretty secluded, and it's almost like a good communication with God and ourselves, and it's just super.
That sounds beautiful.
What part of the country do you live in?
Who, me?
Yes.
Louisiana.
Some other areas they surveyed were things like family income. And they said they found that didn't have too much effect on marital happiness unless it was too high or too low. But if you had, you know, enough money for the bills and food and lodging and stuff, it wasn't a problem. You agree or disagree? And another thing they said that was interesting was that most everyone was really apprehensive before they retired about being together all day long, especially the women. You know, they would, well, you... But after they'd been retired a while, they found that was no problem at all, being together all day, that, you know, they enjoyed it. Any other ideas on that?
It's worse
than ever. Is that Roya?
Where did she get you home? Right.
Religious couples reported marriages were somewhat happier. Good health was associated somewhat with happiness. And when they asked the question, or said the statement, society thinks of older people as non-sexual, 3,000 said, yeah, that's the way society thinks of old people. And 500 said, no, that isn't the way society thinks about older people. But in all the case histories they did, they found that there is a freeing up process going on, and they say there's a sexual revolution among the older people nowadays, so. And enjoyment can be continued into the 90s, so. Don't give up. Don't give up the ship. Yeah. In the Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry, they defined loving this way: to receive and to give physical affection, touching, caressing, closeness, as well as companionship, caring, and sharing. Those are lifelong needs. And they may be exchanged even when the ability or the appetite of sex have waned. The important thing is the proximity of an important other for young and old alike. You know, there are problems like in a nursing home, if a man and woman are in a nursing home, it's difficult to be able to be intimate, or if one of you isn't. I think some nursing homes have solved that by having rooms set aside, but I don't think there are too many.
My mother's in a nursing home, and they have several couples there that have a room.
Do they? Usually nurses are kind of shocked if there's any hanky-panky going on when they open the door.
And kids, your kids are the most shocked. I don't know how they figured where they came from, but they really don't like to think of their parents as being sexual beings. I guess we just have to shock them.
Understanding the physiologic changes as we age can be important, and communicating our feelings and shortcomings and problems to each other can be helpful.
I think this is very important. I think most therapists run into that. You know, being able to, and I think most of us find that most difficult, to be able to ask for what we need. Hey, you know, I need just a little bit of telling me you like me. You like what I did. You think I'm great. You know, and we're embarrassed to ask about it, and it spoils it a little if you ask. Not much, though, actually.
I still like it.
We're all such unique people, and we're unique in every way, really. Yes?
I think the problem I've observed personally is that I've always been sensitive to criticism. That may be true of all. We all are to some degree, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And in connection with the things that go with old age, and I'm approaching that in another 20, 30 years, I'm going to be old. One of the things that I've done, I don't know if I'm conscious, but I have let my family know and my friends know that I'm aging, and I'm starting to feel some of the things that go with aging.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a shock to me. I don't wait for somebody to say, hey, old man, you don't hear as well as you used to, whatever it may be. I say, well, gee, I'm getting older and I don't hear as well as I used to. And so that I don't have to be concerned that someone's going to hurt my feelings. Now, they're going to hit me somewhere along the line, or somewhere I feel, boy, I'm doing great for a guy my age. But generally speaking, the path is very smooth now, because I'm aware that, in fact, I talk jokingly about how long I'm going to live. I happen to be in the life insurance business, and I'm still active in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to my clients by saying, well, gee, I've been trying to retire now for 10 years almost, and I haven't made it. I'm going to stay active as long as I'm able to, and I hope that's going to be 10 or 20 years. Well, I say that with a smile, because I know, and they know, that I'm not likely to be here 20 years from now, 10 years from now, possibly. And so I have myself conditioned to the point where the possibility that the certainty that I'm going to die is no longer a problem to me. If it happens tomorrow, it's a little earlier than I thought I was going to, but things are in reasonably good shape, you know, all things considered. And I think my family maybe looks at me the same way, because we don't steer away from the thought of death. They know how old I am, and they don't know how old Betty is, and I'm a couple years older than she is. So we don't steer away from that. And so consequently, when it happens tomorrow or 20 years from now, I think we'll all be a lot more ready for it. It's been very helpful to me to...
to be very honest about what's going on.
And again, to bring it out into the open ahead of time so that I'm not caught by surprise and the other people who mean something to me are not caught by surprise either.
That sounds like a good idea. Anyone else have anything before we close? Tomorrow, what are you going to be talking about, honey?
What joints we ought to be calling. Joints and bones and so on. And if you'll bring your examples of all these things, which most of us can, because what is it, 50% of those over 65 have some major or minor problem with joints.
So
that's us.
We'll see you tomorrow in this joint.